nothing means nothing if I can't have you.
Hey, it's Michaela Hayes. You may know me from weekday mornings at 10 a.m. I'm usually here without work, talking all sorts of celebrity gossip and how much I love Shawn Mendes. Well, tonight I'm not going to do exactly that. So, did you know that in Ireland there are 20,000 people diagnosed with an IBD at the moment? And I am one of those 20,000 people. 5 years ago, I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease after a 10-year struggle to get diagnosed. It was a lot, it was hard, and I went into it with very, very little information. So over the next three episodes, we're going to look at everything from the glamorous to the not so glamorous, because believe me, there is a lot of both. But first, I think it would make sense to educate ourselves on what exactly an IBD is. Dr. Karen Boland, she is a gastroenterologist in Beaumont Hospital. So here's Karen to tell us a little bit more about IBDs and, well, what makes an IBD?
It's short for inflammatory bowel disease. So it's a chronic condition where you have inflammation going on in the bowel over a long period of time, and it's a lifelong condition. So at the moment, we don't have a cure. However, we're very hopeful, and some treatments that are emerging, that someday we will. And it's really a phrase that encompasses so many symptoms and so many different presentations. It's basically caused by an interplay between your immune system, probably elements of the environment and bacteria and viruses that you're exposed to, and then some genetic susceptibility again. And it's all to do with how your bowel wall integrity is maintained and inflammation going on in the bowel wall generally. So most, as a result, will have symptoms that are focused around your bowel, and the most common one is diarrhea, particularly bloody diarrhea, finding it hard to hold on to your stool, maybe having some accidents, having to rush to the toilet. And the most common thing that I would ask people that's very helpful sometimes is, how often do you have to get up at night to go to the toilet? And that's a very good differentiator between people who have irritable bowel syndrome and IBD or inflammatory bowel syndrome.
One of the first things that kind of went through my mind when I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease was my family. And I know that sounds really silly, but I think maybe as Irish people, we always jump to thinking about everyone else. And I was so worried that my brother was going to get diagnosed with Crohn's, because I'd read all these articles that said, you know, Crohn's is hereditary. And I was like, well, he's a man. He doesn't go to the doctor. What if he has it too? Like, he can get really sick. So is Crohn's disease and colitis hereditary?
A first relative is, say, your sister, your brother, your daughter, your mother. You know, you do have an increased risk of getting Crohn's disease or IBD. You really see that more if you've got two first degree relatives with the condition. We'd usually quote a risk of around about 20%, but I think that there is some research expected now from studies in the next 2 years that will give us a lot more information on that.
For me, my battle, it was very much a battle to get diagnosed with Crohn's disease, started at age 17. So for 10 years, I had to get every test imaginable done, and it was awful. Like, I can't sugarcoat it. It was horrible. I was a young woman and I wasn't used to, you know, having people examining me down there. Like, I found it very, very difficult at first. And look, if I'm going to be honest with you, may as well lay it all out here. I used to cry. I used to get very upset because I just felt the tests that I was having weren't normal. I didn't understand why I had to get them. Now, not a bother, like, they don't faze me at all. But as a medical professional, as someone who has to do this on a daily basis, how do you make it easier for us who are just honestly terrified of what's to lie ahead?
It's so intimate. It's so invasive. I mean, can you think of another condition, you know, outside of, you know, gyny things, you know, where you have to go to the doctor, and part of the conversation is about how often you poo and how often you pee and how sore it is if you're having sexual intercourse and the impact of those things, and then possibly that kind of examination where the way that you're screened is, you know, through your back passage. I mean, to me, it's part of my daily job, but I'm acutely aware it's really challenging for people. I think that we try, and this is where we're so lucky. I think we succeed through our inflammatory bowel disease nurses, and I think I've learned from them more than anybody about the way to communicate with people and the importance of a rapport. And I'll see a new patient sometimes and I'll build up a rapport straight away and they can talk to me about it, and they're often really relieved to be able to say these words like bum and poo and not have somebody flinch. For other people, it takes a lot of time for them to be able to actually say those words out loud and to feel comfortable with that. And this is where we need our IBD nurses.
IBD nurses are one of the few constants we have in our lives when it comes to attending hospital. They are there to wipe your tears, which they have done many times for me. They are there to celebrate your highs, celebrate your lows, and they are just angels without wings. And right now it's Angela Mullen. She is an IBD nurse specialist in the Mater Hospital, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about what IBD nurses actually do.
What my role is in all of this is I am your link from the outside world to the inside world. I am your resource. I am your contact. I am now your new best friend. Because in fairness, it's an awful lot to take on. It doesn't immaterial of what age you are. Okay, you could be 10, you could be 16, you could be any age, you could be 34, you could be 44, you could be 54. Do you know what I mean? It's a lot to take on, and it's an awful lot of information, and you need, so it's good to meet somebody outside of the clinic situation as well too, and just to be able to sit down and talk to somebody. Because invariably the first thing you'll do is you will go on Dr. Google, and Dr. Google will tell you the worst case scenario that is potentially out there ever. We see this all the time, all your nurse specialists in all your units, and I know all of them in the country see this all the time. We are your link. So you want to be able to talk to somebody, and you are I am the constant that's always here. So teams change, consultants stay the same, doctors change, doctors come, doctors go, junior doctors go right through, and it's good to be able to come into clinic and see somebody and know somebody and have that constant source. You know, email, phone, advice line, that's what you have. And you've got somebody who answers your questions and your queries and your concerns at an appropriate time. And I think if nothing else, right, that's the one thing that people need to know, that there's plenty, and there's like, there is nurses up and down, there's 30 nurses up and down this country. And that's your person that you need to ring or you need to talk to. And they know you because they're the constant.
So when I first got diagnosed, one of the very first things that I did was Google it, because I don't know about you, but with me, if someone starts giving me loads of medical information, I just kind of focus on one word and I zone out. Unfortunately, that was the same situation when I got told I had Crohn's disease. Now, lucky enough, my granny was there. She has been at every single appointment with me, with the exception of the past few, because obviously with COVID, there are restrictions. Granny did kind of fill me in on what was happening, but the first thing I did was Google, and well, look, it's not a good thing to do for many, many reasons.
First thing you do is not go on Dr. Google, and don't join American sites, because you need to keep it real and you need to keep it into the culture and the life that you're used to living. So American culture is completely different to what we would be used to. And also, everything you read online, and you can agree with me on this, you have to take with a grain of salt.
As I mentioned a little earlier, I am one of 20,000 people diagnosed with an IBD in Ireland. Like, that's not even Europe. It's just Ireland. It's quite a significant number. And the thing about IBD, which is what is fascinating, is it's different for every single person. I think you could put all 20,000 of us in a room and no two of us will have all the exact same symptoms. I didn't want IBD and I to just be about myself, because I don't want you just to learn about Crohn's and colitis from my experience, because my experience is just mine, you know? So I've learned over the years, there's such a phenomenal community and support when it comes to IBD. There's nothing better than knowing you're not alone. I found three of the most amazing women I have ever met, and they decided that they would come on and chat with me about their journey with IBD. Now, there are so many people battling this disease every single day, and I know everyone who goes through it is phenomenal, but I'm so grateful for Cara O'Donovan, who has represented Ireland in kickboxing, Emma Gallagher, who is a mother of two, she's a teacher, and she's now a published author, and the award-winning artist Sinead Lawless. Those three ladies have made my life so much better since getting to know them with that with this documentary. They are phenomenal. They take it in their stride, and they have a very dark sense of humor like myself, and they're just badasses. So I wanted to know how their IBD journeys began and, you know, how it's affected their lives.
I think I was shocked because, like, I was sick, like, but I was thinking, this would be something like, give me the cure and I'll be on my way out of here. Thanks very much. I had vague recollection. There was a campaign around the Get Your Belly Out around the time or a little bit before I was diagnosed. And that was like the first thing I was like, oh, like, I can't play sport. Like, if I have to have that, like, that was my first thing. It was pure selfish and thinking like, oh, I can't play sport. They won't allow me to play sport with. And then they were like, no, like, you don't have to have surgery straight away. Like, we'll try and manage it and try different things. But I wouldn't have got any help until I was probably like on death's door, only that my mum and my sister were away on holidays with me. So like, they were like, no, this isn't normal. You shouldn't be like crawling in there the bathroom and this sick. Like, it was then that made me go to the hospital then when I got back from holidays. And I'd say they were very, like, they were brilliant to me, really supportive. But I think they were hoping that I'd give up sport and like take it easy and do all that sort of stuff. But they never really said it. I'd say they were probably freaked out, probably more than I was.
I felt like I told you so, because I knew before I actually got the diagnosis. I really suspected that this is what was going on. I was scared because I had a feeling it was more than what they thought it was initially. I just didn't think it sort of added up, and then that was realized quite soon afterwards. I was just really scared, actually. I think scared is probably the most dominant thing, more than anything else. What does this mean? And I knew because I had an aunt who had it, and just there was just this whispered thing around the family of, oh, she has Crohn. So I was like, okay, I actually don't know how to spell this, to Google it properly. I don't know what it actually means. I just know it's never been spoken about as a sort of a no big deal, you know, that kind of way. So it was just, it's quite scared.
It was ulcerative colitis I was diagnosed with. When I got the diagnosis, well, it happened for me quite quickly. I know some people wait years, but I had always had issues all through my life with some form or other of like reflux or IBS, as it was diagnosed originally. So for me, there was kind of almost a sense of validation in having a diagnosis, because it was like, okay, we have a problem here. And if we have a problem, then maybe we can fix it.
So as I mentioned, I did have to get a stoma. I got it in March of this year, just as the country shut down for COVID, which was excellent timing in one way and horrendous timing in another way. But look, we are out the other end, so it's grand. Well, of the surgery, not of COVID. But one thing I did before getting the surgery was research names. So I had been told that the stoma, the little bag, you should give it a name, because when it acts up or when you're having bad days, because it's not, you have no control over it at all. So it does what it wants. I kind of feel it's a bit like a newborn baby. It does what it wants whenever it wants. So it's not like, you know, when you normally go to the toilet, if you don't have a bag, you're in control of that. I'm not. And it can act up a lot. So one thing that's recommended is to name them, because then when you're giving out about them, you're not giving out about your own body. So mine is Paloma the Stoma, and well, anyone who's very close to me knows that we're not friends with Paloma yet. We're still building that relationship.
The nurse I had, her name's Breed, it was Vincent's, and I remember meeting her, and she was the most practical. She was so funny, she was practical, but she was also kind of like, I'm here for you. One of the first things she did with the surgery, she went, I want you to give it a name. I want you to give your stoma a name. And I was like, no, I'm all right, thanks. And she was like, no. She went, you know, I'm going to insist. She went, because it's actually helping you and you're going to be friends with it. And it's not something to resent or to throw anger at you. And it's, you know, you're going to have a little name for it. And I was like, okay. through. And then it was just the support and care and the fact that the doctors weren't allowed to discharge me. It had to go through her because she was checking on my mental health to make sure that I was okay.
One thing that I suppose I'm really worried about now, I've always had scars. I've had loads of surgery, so I've always had kind of little laparoscopy scars, little keyhole scars, and they're kind of like battle wounds, you know? Body confidence now is going to be a big issue with me because I got to the stage where, you know, the treatments weren't working, so I had to get a bag. I had to get a stoma, and I have not really shown Paloma the stoma to many people. Like, I've taken a few pictures and posted them, but in real life, like, I can't imagine standing in front of someone and them seeing Paloma. Like, outside of my little bubble of really, really close people. Like, what if there was a man to come into my life? And, you know, what if I showed it to someone and they were really off put by it? You can't blame them. But yeah, it's a big worry. It's a big worry that I have. But I suppose it's a battle I'll have to deal with when the time comes. But how do you find body confidence with it?
Body confidence afterwards, I don't mind the scars as much. I had scars anyway from the C-sections. My first C-section scar I found horrendous because I had no scars at all. Like, as I say, I've always been very healthy. So actually that one, and I got keloid scar and after that. So I had found that scar tricky to deal with.
One thing I only thought about from doing this and chatting to Emma, Cara and Sinead was how the people around us felt when we got diagnosed. So I never thought of that. And I decided to ask my granny the other day. Now, granny won't come on the radio because she doesn't like to media, which is great considering I'm her grandchild. But I asked her, how did she feel when I got diagnosed? Was it scary? Was there anything that had ever bothered her or made her really worried? And granny said, you know, when I got diagnosed, she was really happy because she had spent 10 years coming into hospital with me and seen me, you know, in a ball crying when they kept telling me nothing was wrong, and seen me in agony and pain and everything. And her heart was broken, hoping that, you know, someday I would have an answer. But the thing that really broke my heart was, you know, was she ever really scared? And she told me, and I literally only found this out the other day, she told me that when I went for my last surgery, which was to get Miss Paloma's stoma, it was the first time she was genuinely really scared. She thought I wouldn't make it. That's a real reality check. I suppose you don't consider how others who love you feel about you going through this process, but how has your family felt? Or do you know how they were when you got diagnosed?
Initially, when I first had my symptoms, I kind of kept them. It was me and Stuart, my husband. We knew about it, but I kind of kept them from everybody else, to be honest with you, because, well, first of all, I didn't want to be a drama llama, you know, and that sounds ridiculous, right? But again, in my head, I kept denying my own experience in my head, going, this is fine. This will sort itself out. You know, there's no point in getting everyone stressed and whatever. So it wasn't until I was actually hospitalized that my parents even found out that when I was in the high dependency unit, that Sinead's been sick.
Getting diagnosed with an IBD, it's terrifying. It's very scary, even if you suspect it or not. And you kind of, I don't know, it's like life swirls out of control, almost, not to be dramatic. So, you know, if someone is just at the start of their journey, they are just getting diagnosed, or, you know, it's been a few weeks, what piece of advice would you give them?
The first thing I'd say to them is to ask about some written information and not to be nervous about asking people to recap. And I love when people say, can you write down, you know, a certain thing that I might have said, because I know that I'm kind of getting through to them. The other thing that's really important that not enough people do is I'll often ask somebody who has a lot of symptoms, if I could fix one thing for you, what would it be? And it's amazing how often people actually haven't thought about that. And they haven't thought about how their symptoms impact their life. And they haven't thought about what's the big thing that's worrying for them. And I think it's really valuable for you to think before you go into your consultation. That's really helpful for us as doctors, because it helps us understand what your priorities are. And ultimately, as my colleagues always say, our goal in IBD is we're not going to cure you yet, but we're going to get you back to a good quality of life. But we need to know what that looks like for you.
Thank you so much for joining me for tonight's episode of IBD and I. It is very different to what you're used to hearing me talk about. you know, weekday mornings from 10 a.m. But I think it's just as important, if not more so important, than my love of Shawn Mendes, to be honest with you. Tonight's episode, the aim was to kind of give you an idea of what an IBD is and how it can kind of affect you. Now, tomorrow night, we have another episode of IBD and I from 9 p.m. We're going to look at children when they're diagnosed, how they cope with it, you know, then moving over to adult clinics. Also, have a leading psychologist, Susan Brannick, who tells us about how having an IBD can affect your mental health, because honestly, it can, trust me. And also the topic, which is now something I've only realised I have to start thinking about, fertility. And IBD can affect your fertility, and we are going to be chatting about that more as well. I'll catch you tomorrow for another episode of IBD and I from 9 p.m. Slán. IBD and I is a three-part series which has been funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.